without enmity,
Shanta
Vigraham,
having a peaceful personality,
Atma Aramam,
satisfied in himself,
Katam,
how,
Dveshti,
hates,
Jagata,
of the universe,
Daivatam,
demigod,
Mahat,
the great.
Lord Shiva,
the spiritual master of the entire world,
is free from enmity,
is a peaceful personality.
And is always satisfied in himself.
He is the greatest among the demigods.
How is it possible that Daksha could be inimical towards such an auspicious personality?
Purport. Lord Shiva is described here as Charachara
Guru,
the spiritual master of all animate and inanimate objects.
He is sometimes known as Bhutanath,
which means the worshipful deity of the dull-headed.
Bhuta is also sometimes taken to indicate the ghosts.
Lord Shiva takes charge of reforming persons who are ghosts and demons,
not to speak of others who are godly.
Therefore, he is the spiritual master of everyone,
both the dull and demoniac
and the highly learned Vaishnavas.
It is also stated, Vaishnavanam yata shambhu.
Shambhu,
Lord Shiva, is the greatest of all Vaishnavas.
On one hand, he is the worshipable object of the dull demons, and on the other, he is the best of all Vaishnavas or devotees.
And he has a sampradaya called the Rudra Sampradaya.
Even if he is an enemy or is sometimes angry,
such a personality cannot be the object of envy.
So Vidura, in astonishment, asked why he was taken as such, especially by Daksha.
Daksha is also not an ordinary person.
He is a prajapati in charge of fathering population,
and all his daughters are highly elevated, especially
Sati.
The word Sati means the most chaste.
Whenever there is consideration of chastity,
Sati, this wife of Lord Shiva and daughter of Daksha, is considered first.
Vidura, therefore, was astonished.
Daksha is such a great man, he thought,
and is the father of Sati.
And Lord Shiva is the spiritual master of everyone.
How then could there possibly be so much enmity between them that Sati, the most chaste goddess, could give up her body because of their quarrel?
Very interesting.
Very interesting question. I might read the next verse. Read a few verses because there's no purport, so we'll just to tidy things up a little bit.
Etad akyahi me brahman jamatu swasurasya cha. Vidveshas tu yata pranams tatya je dusya jan sati. My dear Maitreya, to part with one's life is very difficult. Would you kindly explain to me how such a son-in-law and father-in-law could quarrel so bitterly that the great goddess Sati could give up her life? Very interesting question. And I'll read this next one too. This is storyline. Fair bit of storyline here, so I'll... The sage Maitreya said, in a former time, Maitreya Uvacha, Pura Vishvas Srijam Satre Samitaha Paramarshayaha Tatamara Guna Sarave Sanuga Munayognayaha. The sage Maitreya said, in a former time, the leaders of the universal creation performed a great sacrifice, in which all the great sages, philosophers, demigods, and fire gods assembled with their followers. Purport. Upon being asked by Vidura, the sage Maitreya began to explain the cause of the misunderstanding between Lord Shiva and Daksha, because of which the goddess Sati gave up her body. Thus begins the history of a great sacrifice performed by the leaders of the universal creation, namely Marichi, Daksha and Vasishta. These great personalities arranged for a great sacrifice for which demigods like Indra and the fire gods assembled with their followers. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva were also present. So this is not an ordinary occasion. Tatta pravishtam rishayo drishtvarkam ivarochashah Braj Brajamanam Vitim Miram Kuruvantam Tan Mahat Sadaha. When Daksha, the leader of the Prajapatis, entered that assembly, his personal bodily lustre, as bright as the effulgence of the sun, the entire assembly was illuminated, and all the assembled personalities became insignificant in his presence. Udatishtan sudasyate svadishnyebhya sahagnayaha rite virincham sarvam cha tad Pasakshipta Chaitasaha. Influenced by his personal bodily lustre, all the fire gods and other participants in that great assembly, with the exceptions of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, gave up their own sitting places and stood in respect for Daksha. Sadasas Patabhir Daksho Bhagavan Sadhu Satkritaha Ajam loka gurum natva nishashada tad agyayat agyaya. Daksha was adequately welcomed by the president of the great assembly, Lord Brahma. After offering Lord Brahma respect, Daksha, by the order of Brahma, properly took his seat. And will we reveal all? Why not? We'll do this one as well. Text 8. Because this tells us why all of this took place. Sadasas patabhir daksho bhagavan sadhu satkritaha ajam loka gurum natva nishasada tad agyaya. Oh no, I already read that one, sorry, this one. Pran Nishanam Midam Drishtva Nam Rishyat Tadana Dritaha uvachavamam chakshurbhyam abhivikshatahaniva. Before taking his seat, however, Daksha was very much offended to see Lord Shiva sitting and not showing him any respect. At that time, Daksha became greatly angry and his eyes glowing. He began to speak very strongly against Lord Shiva. Purport: Lord Shiva, being the son-in-law of Daksha, was expected to show his father-in-law respect by standing with the others. But because Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are the principal demigods, their positions are greater than Daksha's. Daksha, however, could not tolerate this. And he took it as an insult by his son-in-law. Previously also, he was not very much satisfied with Lord Shiva, for Shiva looked very poor and was niggardly in dress. Okay, so here we have a problem. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namah. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadaha Mahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, now, Maitreya has, Vidura has identified a, what shall we call it, a dilemma, contradiction. A conundrum, right? Because here are two very exalted and elevated personalities, right? Lord Shiva and Daksha are not ordinary persons. Didn't Daksha have darshan of Lord Vishnu? Right? So you know, this is... he's not an ordinary person. And also, when he enters the sacrificial arena, you know, the Jagyashala, then the whole place lights up like the sun has arrived, right? It's like the sun god, practically speaking. So that indicates a very elevated personality. And the descriptions here of Lord Shiva also. Chara guru. He's the guru of everything, not just everyone, but everything. Huh? Nirvairam, without enmity. These are qualities of great devotee. Actually, the qualities of every devotee. Right? One doesn't have to have a prominent position to be an advanced devotee. These characteristics described here of Lord Shiva are common to all devotees, right? Well, pure devotees, is it? So, non-envious, and eligible to be everybody's guru. Kiba vipra kiba nyasi shudra kene noi ye Krishna tattva veta se guru hoi. If you understand the science of devotional service, then you're eligible to be a guru. It means you're learned. See everybody equally. Understand that everything is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is there for his enjoyment, right? Bhaktaram jagya tapasam. The enjoyer of all of our activities is Krishna, not us. Because most people are operating under another supposition, right? And this is the difference, actually, between Lord Shiva and Daksha. Which is a warning, actually. It's a warning about having a position, being prominent. Even being a guru can be a problem. If one doesn't have this very firm set of convictions, nirvairam, without enmity, a devotee has to, this is one of the first, Prabhupada says, one of the first symptoms of pure devotional service is to see everybody equally. It's very important, right? So, this is a spirit soul, that's a spirit soul, here's another spirit soul, and that each of the spirit souls is equal. Even though they may be endowed, or they may be imbued with, or they may have been provided different facilities. So one's a dog. No, Pandita Samadarshanaha. So what is it? Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini Sunichai Vasvapake Cha Pandita Samadarshanaha. So there's the Brahmana. Gavi, is it? Cow. Hasti. Elephant. Shuni chaiva svapa keja. Yeah, a dog and a dog eater. Right? A learned person sees everybody equally. Despite the fact that because of their karma, because of their... And this is the vision, and not commonly shared vision, but the vision of the Vaishnavas and a vision of a spiritual teacher or a spiritual leader, that's what a guru is to see everybody equally. But, okay, one may be a brahmana and one may be a dog eater, but the spiritual identity of everyone is equal. Sama darshanaha. Despite the fact that because of this person's activities in their lifetime means they've now become a dog or a elephant or a cow. Or in the human form of life, elevated and wealthy, learned, whatever, or dull and, you know,
degraded. The a transcendentalist sees everybody from the spiritual point of view and then acts for their benefit based on that, those spiritual principles. Because, you know, it's not because we see the dog and the Brahmana as being equal, then we treat them the same. Right? Or, you know, Prabhupada gives the example, we don't go and embrace the tiger. You become a tiger's breakfast. Right? So, we're careful. I remember I worked at the zoo when I was a young, late teens and early 20s. And we used to play with the animals at the zoo. And I remember we were mucking around with a panther, and the panther bit one of my friends. Well, friends, I can hardly say they were friends. Some of my associates at the zoo. There was Percy the chimpanzee. He was very strong. And he grew up, he was brought up with human beings. So he was almost like, he didn't never like being in a cage. That's for sure. And there was a big fellow called Norm. He was big, and he used to go and arm wrestle with Percy. And he used to beat him, and Percy didn't like it. So one day Percy just, he got upset. You know, when I was at the zoo, I saw the personality of the animals, and that was when I realised that we're all equal. Right? We have our likes and dislikes, even Percy the chimp. And because Percy's like a human being, you can see it very clearly in the character. Whereas, you know, the crocodile, you know, the crocodile would just lie there and his eyes were, and you couldn't tell what he was thinking. Or even if he was awake. Because, you know, in the winter time, so cold, he didn't do anything. But, you know, you didn't play with the crocodile. I'm going to assure you that. I remember one time I was working in the tiger. We were repairing the cage of the tiger's pen. And we were standing on the roof and a tiger was just walking backwards and forwards, looking at us. So, okay, everybody's equal, but be careful with some personalities. Right? Because of their past actions, activities, and this is explained in the 13th chapter of the in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's explained other places also, how a transcendentalist can see how each living entity has acquired the modes of material nature, or shall we say, by the association with the modes of material nature, we acquire a particular mentality. And that mentality then carries us to our next body. So if we behave like a dog in this lifetime, then, hello, next lifetime, woof woof, you'll be a dog. Huh? Or whatever. This is how the living entity acquires different forms or different bodies. Now, not everybody can see that. That's a peculiar, well, not peculiar, but it's a vision for the advanced souls. And we can see that with Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is, and with that vision, great Mahatmas, great personalities, are merciful to everyone. Because they see the inherent spiritual qualities in everyone. And they try to encourage them in acts of devotion. Huh? Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant, but encourage them in acts of devotion. Which, you know, for us, what does that mean? We go and chant Hare Krishna. We feed people prasadam. We distribute books. To help elevate people from their state of slumber, they're asleep, to their real identity. And so a spiritual master or a guru, if you like, or just a devotee,
every devotee ultimately acts on that platform, gives people an opportunity so they can gradually be elevated in Krishna consciousness. You know, for dogs, we don't sit down and preach to a dog, right? But we give them prasadam. I said, that remind, next time I go past my neighbour's place, I'll give Millie some prasadam. Really nice dog. Such a nice dog. She's very friendly and soft-hearted. So I'll give her some prasadam. But, you know, for the human beings, we can... Well, actually, the human beings, many of them, are so covered over, they're not much better than dogs, right? Really. Dvipada pashu, right? Two-legged animals. And we see that by the way they behave. The way human beings behave, by any measure, actually they're just animals. Of course, by the way, mind you, we still treat them like they're human beings. Even though we know their behaviour is like an animal, we still have to treat them with respect and so forth. Right. So, we see that in the character of here of Lord Shiva. He sees everybody equally. And so he's described here as the guru of the whole world, basically, of the moving and the non-moving. And Niravairam, without enmity, and Shantavigraham, he has a very peaceful personality. Very peaceful. He understands. Everybody, everything is moving according to the arrangements of the Lord. So one man may be a very big, big, big personality. Another one may be a dog. Right? But a devotee understands how they got to that place and how that's ultimately sanctioned by the Lord. Upadrashta anumanta cha bhata bhakta maheshvara. The devotee is able to see the overseer and the permitter. Hridesh arjuna tishtati brahmayan savabhutanam yantra rudhani mayaya ishvaraha savabhutanam. Krishna's the super soul is the Lord and master of everyone, and he directs the wanderings of every thing, and every living entity is awarded their facility by his arrangement. So the devotee sees this is Krishna's arrangement, that everybody's in this, in the situations that they're in. And he's not, you know, Prabhupada says, you know, if he's given some money, oh, it's Krishna's arrangement. If he has no money, it's also Krishna's arrangement. He's not disturbed by that. And if somebody else has got something that he hasn't got, he's not disturbed by that. Suridam Savabhutanam. Krishna's the well-wisher of everybody. And so the facility that I have is ordained by Krishna. So, Atma Aramam. He's satisfied. He's satisfied in himself. The devotee is self-satisfied. Ideally. Self-satisfied. Detached also. Unfortunately, that... those qualities upset others. Right? The qualities of a devotee, sometimes people get... Because, here's what happens. When a devotee acts like this, with a very, in a very detached fashion, and always working for the benefit of others, then he gets praised. Or shall we say, not so much praised, but is appreciated by others. Right? Appreciated by others. There's a good example of this, Haridas Thakur. Right? Haridas Thakur was elevated like Lord Shiva, right? Lord Brahma, very elevated devotee. And he was appreciated and glorified by the general populace. Even though he was a Muslim, he was born in a Muslim family. There's the story of Ramchandra Khan, right? Ramchandra Khan was a Hindu, and you know, a prominent personality. A lot of similarities with Daksha, actually, when you think about it. He was a was he a tax collector? Isn't it described? He wasn't a majumdar. He collected taxes. So he's a representative of the king, the Nawab, collecting taxes. And so, you know, obviously somebody to be respected. But you know, if you're the tax collector, you may be respected but not liked. Right? Everybody will be very polite to you, and they'll give you a big seat and everything, but you know, secretly they'll be thinking, this guy's, you know, and he's probably taking a cut of the money too, right? I think he was, right? So therefore he got in trouble. Got in a bit of trouble. But when, he did not like the fact that Haridas Thakur, who was a Muslim by birth, was respected by all of the Hindus. It was too much for him to tolerate. Huh? And so, as the story goes, he plotted in various ways to bring about the downfall of Haridas Thakur. And so he arranged offered a bribe to one of the young prostitutes, who then promised to bring about the demise of Haridas Thakur. And of course, cut a long story short, that failed by the associate, and it shows the power of a devotee, right? When somebody associates with the devotees, then the devotees change that person's character, that person's personality is changed, not vice versa. Asatsangatyag evaishnav achar. The first qualification of a devotee is that they give up those who are attached to the asat, to the non-permanent. The devotees are concerned about sat, the truth. They're satyam, right? Truthful, seeking the truth. And we avoid the association of those who are absorbed in the temporary realm. Temporary world as if it was permanent. We avoid that. So Haridas Thakur, he promised the prostitute, she petitioned him, he said, yes, I'll fulfill all of your desires, but just I have to chant my rounds first. But he was chanting, you know, many, many rounds a day. More than 64 rounds a day. So that took some time. 190, wasn't it? Something like that. 192. There you go. Try chanting 192 rounds a day. That means, and you're not allowed to eat until you finish your rounds. Huh? Yeah? So, very elevated, very, very elevated. And because of the association of Haridas Thakur, then the young lady was purified, and she became a devotee. She had to reveal to Haridas Thakur what her purpose was, because Haridas Thakur already knew that anyway. Huh? He knew that anyway, and so the plot, the plan, the ploy of Ramchandra Khan was revealed. He was revealed as being a bit of a rascal. No, not a bit of a rascal. And later on, Ramchandra Khan's, the Nawab's men, the king's men, wasn't it, came? They slaughtered a cow in his... Sorry? The Muslims came. Yeah, they were the king's men, the soldiers. And they slaughtered a cow in his, what do they call that? The manda, something. Yeah, anyway, the entrance, they desecrated his house, put it that way. So one is, of course, the moral, the warning of this story is don't offend the Vaishnavas. And that's part of this story here about Daksha. So a devotee is not envious. He's peaceful and satisfied in himself. Yet, Daksha became envious of Lord Shiva. Because Daksha, and it's explained here, Daksha was... And it's quite amazing, isn't it? You know, how would you feel if wherever you went, the place lit up like the sunshine? Right? You'd obviously, you get it. It's kind of, that'd be a bit of a head spinner, wouldn't it? And so there's a difference. Maharaj Daksha is a very elevated personality. He's one of the Bajapatis. But it is something of a material position as opposed to a spiritual position. He's a very elevated person, even to the point where he got the darshan of Lord Vishnu. So we can understand, he's a special, special personality. But there's a warning here that these special positions come also with caveats. And you know, a very interesting point that's mentioned here, his daughter, Sati, is, and this is a measure of his personality, that his daughter and his daughters, and sons also, they had many good qualities, right? So Daksha is also an elevated personality, but there's a warning here. Positions of prominence, positions of influence, having wealth, having followers, having learning, beauty, having these entitlements or having these benedictions, if you like, can also carry with them dangers. And again, this is this point that, well, two things. We have to see everybody equally, and we have to see that all of the possessions that a person has, all the facilities that a person has, they actually belong to Krishna. They don't belong to us. So if a person is endowed
with these benedictions of position, of wealth, of followers, of learning, of beauty. That's probably one that we don't have to worry about too much. But Prabhupada says, you know, in Kali Yuga, even a pauper is proud of his penny. Even we've got such insignificant opulences, but still we think we're, you know, we're like Daksha. Or we're devotees, so we think we're like Lord Shiva. You know, we think we're great gurus and greatly advanced spiritual personalities. And even spiritual advancement can be a danger. Right? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions this in his I forgot the name of the book. What's it? Madhurya Kadambini. Yeah, I was thinking of Madhurya. Yeah, Madhurya Amrita, I was thinking, but yeah, Madhurya Kadambini, where he mentions that there are anattas that arise from the practice of bhakti. Right? Because devotees become famous and respected and honoured by others. It's a duty to honour. Something that Lord Shiva didn't do, because if you don't honour the devotees, then you may commit offences to them. Right? And that's considered to be, you know, that's the hati mata, the mad elephant offence, is to offend the Vaishnavas, which is what Daksha did. Because Daksha was somewhat full of his importance, his personality, his position more than anything. Personality is different. You can have a position, and your personality will determine your advancement and how you carry yourself and how you carry that position. Lord Shiva's very elevated personality, honoured by everybody, it's mentioned here. He's honoured by the demigods and others, the Vaishnavas, because he's such a great devotee. But he's also Bhutanath. He's worshipped by the fools and the dull-headed. It's worshipped by everybody. I mean, you know, if you're worshipped by everybody, that's heavy stuff. Right? Heady. You walk into the room and then everybody bows down to you. It's like, whoa. But a devotee doesn't get affected by that because he's, you know, there's an example. Srila Prabhupada came to Melbourne and the reporters are saying, you know, why is everybody bowing down to you? As if you're God. Right? And Prabhupada said, I'm like the tax collector. Right? I'm like the tax collector. The tax collector goes and collects funds on behalf of the king. But he doesn't think that what he collects belongs to himself. Not like Ramchandra Khan, who was had his finger in the, had his hand in the till. He said, I collect obeisances. I collect people's offerings of respect, but they're not for me. I collect them on behalf of Krishna and I give them to Krishna. So this is the point of the devotee, that whatever the devotee is given, he understands that belongs to Krishna. Yes, obviously. But Krishna first. Guru Maharaj is also Krishna's representative. A devotee is elevated because he's Krishna's representative. And he says, he acts and behaves, he says the same things that Krishna does. So, but even that's for highly elevated, that's an elevated devotee that can accept offerings of respect, offerings of money, followers. Lord Chaitanya says, Nardanam, don't give me money. Narjanam, no followers. Na Sundarim, no beautiful personalities. I don't want these things. But ultimately, all of that belongs to Krishna anyway. So the devotee can live without that and be detached and be happy. This is the Atmarama, right, that Lord Shiva is described as. There's a greater satisfaction in possessing self-awareness and self-realization than there is in possessing money. But the materialistic people can't understand that. There's a word. Why are the devotees not interested in money? Yet they're collecting so much money, right? They don't like that. Or when they see the devotees are collecting money, they say, oh, why are you attached to money? You shouldn't be attached to money. Give it to me, of course. A devotee collects money, but he's not attached to it and doesn't enjoy it. Or if he enjoys it, he or she enjoys it, they enjoy it, they enjoy in offering it to Krishna. This is... Bhavananda used to tell us the stories about how in Calcutta on Janmashtami, the wealthy people would worship. You know, often they'd have like Prabhupada's family deity, Radha Govinda, was worshipped by people in the neighbourhood. So on Janmashtami, everybody in the neighbourhood would cook huge feasts and they'd decorate and gorgeous dress and so forth and offer all of that to Krishna. And then they would go and see they'd go and visit their friends to see all of the gorgeous arrangements that had been made for Krishna's pleasure. They wouldn't sit down and just eat the feast. They just appreciate and value and enjoy the offerings. Right? And that's their festival, is to see how each other had worshipped Krishna. They weren't attached to it for themselves. You know, whereas we cook a feast for Krishna, we think, ooh, ooh, is it offered yet? Done the offering yet? How many gulab jamuns did they cook? So subtle. These are subtle things for the devotees to, because getting to this level of advancement that's observed here in Lord Shiva requires purity and purification also, because there are these subtle attachments. And so, you know, it's not... And this is why Lord Chaitanya set the example as a teaching us, right? Lord Chaitanya appeared... He's Krishna himself, but he appeared as a devotee to teach us. Nardanam, Narjanam, Nasundarim. Don't give me these things because they're dangerous. But for Krishna's service, the devotee will accept these opulences and will, as Prabhupada explained, I'm not God. I'm the representative of God. And so I take these offerings and I accept them on the behalf of the Lord. And that's in a mood of compassion for the benefit of others. He doesn't take anything for himself, but makes sure that it all gets passed on to Krishna. Great, great. Then everybody benefits. And of course, you know, Prabhupada says that devotees will never be in want. If we have that mood and that mentality, then we'll never be
in what? Krishna, Prabhupada makes a point, you know, the pigeons and the pigeons around here are overfed, right? And the sparrows and whatever. Everybody gets their meals. Right? They're all looked after. So the devotees will also be looked after. And with opulence too. You know, we live in a fairly opulent situation because we're serving Krishna. And Krishna looks after his servants. But for the materialistic people, they don't like that. They become envious. Huh? The devotee is actually detached. He's not interested in opulence per se. Although he may share it, because as Krishna's servant, Krishna served in opulence, so the devotee will have some opulence. But the materialistic people get envious of that. And that's what happened here with Daksha. Lord Shiva, and because he thought, and this is what happens sometimes, you know, we've given you money, right? We've given you facility, now you should do what we tell you to do. Right? And Daksha's thinking like that. You're my son-in-law, I've given you my daughter who's very elevated, and you're my son-in-law. And ordinarily, the son-in-law would be junior to the father-in-law, right? Ordinarily. Right? In this case, Lord Shiva is senior to Daksha. Right? And so because he's accepted his daughter as his wife, Daksha's daughter as his wife, doesn't make him then junior. No. Doesn't make him a junior. But Daksha's thinking like that. I've given you my daughter, so therefore now you should bow down to me. Effectively, that's what's going on. But Lord Shiva didn't, because Lord Shiva, a Vaishnava, knows his position also. We see that with Srila Prabhupada. Although Srila Prabhupada was endowed with many great qualities, humility being one of them, still he understood his position. You know, he didn't demand that on all of the buildings of ISKCON we put His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada for his benefit. Right? That was for our benefit, to remember who everything belongs to. Right? He didn't want to see his name there just for his pleasure. But he understood his role. I'm a humble servant. But at the same time, his position, his identity, his spiritual identity is special. As a founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and Lord Shiva, he understood his position. Huh? He doesn't have to bow down to Daksha because Daksha's his father-in-law. He's doing Daksha a favour, actually. But Daksha, because of his motivations, which are revealed later on, he's more of a karma kandi than a bhakti yogi, isn't it? And so therefore, shakale ashanta is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The devotees are peaceful, but if you're not a devotee, then you'll be disturbed by these material desires. Because we're devotees and we're disturbed by material desires, so that means more purification required. And we find it. If we find ourselves upset because somebody's got some facility apparently more than we might have, sometimes happens.
Devotees who've been around longer get upset if a younger devotee is given more recognition, more facility, more influence, more power, right? How come I'm older devotee than him? I'm more advanced, therefore. Right? Older means more advanced, doesn't it? Can happen. Can happen. So if we find that we're becoming envious of somebody else's facilities, we should check ourselves. Or who Daksha couldn't. This is one of the problems with these material desires. They say it's so strong and powerful, it's hard to check. And then you have to learn your lesson the hard way. Right? Anybody had that experience? We've all had that experience. Right? Painful, painful, painful. It's painful to have to live with ourselves, isn't it? Unfortunately, we're stuck. We're stuck with ourselves. So we have to chant Hare Krishna. And this is why rendering service to the devotees is so important. Always maintain that mood of servitude, which we saw in Prabhupada. Very humble. One of the qualifications, Vidya Vinaya Sampane, is humility. A devotee doesn't become proud of their learning, proud of their opulence, proud of their facilities, proud of their followers, because he or she keeps this top of mind, the understanding that everything belongs to Krishna. It's not mine. Idam Krishnaya, idam na mama. Very important principle of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, we read this last year, it was last year, that a symptom of a pure devotee is that they see everybody equally. Right? Pretty amazing, you know, when you think of it. I read that and I thought, wow, that's interesting. That's a symptom of purity. And then we see that the facility that each person has is ultimately directed, given, it's all been given by Krishna. And an advanced devotee accepts it as Krishna's, not as belonging to himself or herself. And seeing everything like that, then they don't become proud of what is being provided ultimately by Krishna. They can see it in the proper perspective. Whereas Daksha couldn't see that. He saw Lord Shiva in a very elevated position. He has given him his daughter, and he wants Lord Shiva, even though Lord Shiva is more elevated than him, he's not able to see that, and he wants Shiva to bow down to him. That's why he was upset, basically. Didn't show him enough respect. Daksha, however, could not tolerate this. Right? Prabhupada makes a comment here also. Lord Shiva looked very poor and was niggardly in dress. Covered in ashes and, you know, dreadlocks. Which is, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. Right? Every Tuesday night, my dad used to take us to the library. We didn't have a television. Most everybody had televisions, but my dad didn't like television. And I tell you why. My father taught in country schools, then he went and taught in the city. And he noticed that the kids in the city, they were all watching television. Television didn't exist out in the country, but it was hard. They were harder to teach.
when our kids from the Gurukul went to the lawn school, the teachers loved the Hare Krishna kids because they could remember what they were doing the day before. So the teacher asked, what were we doing yesterday? Our kids could say, yeah, we did this, we did that, the other thing. The kids who were watching television couldn't remember. Interesting. Huh? So we used to go to the library every Tuesday night and we'd borrow 3 or 4 books, and those are the books that we would read. And so my dad would be saying, I'd say, oh, I cannot choose a book. My father would give me a book and say, this is a good book. Read that one. And I look at the cover and I think, ah, no, that doesn't look any good. No, that's not a good book. My dad had read the book. I hadn't. I look at the cover. Yeah, no, not like that. But, so we have to be careful. You know, later on I'd read the book and I think, oh, that's a pretty good book. Forget about what's on the cover. You have to read it. So we don't judge people by their, especially devotees, we don't judge devotees by how they look. We judge them by the qualities. And you see in the devotees so many 26 qualities of a devotee. Daksha wasn't able to do that because of his covering. He wasn't able, even though he was almost self-illumined, right? Self-illumined means you've come from Vaikuntha, right? When Lord Chaitanya was in Varanasi and he revealed his effulgence, then all of Prakasananda Saraswati and his followers are all, woo! They were struck by Lord Chaitanya's effulgence. And you see that in a devotee. You can see the effulgence of the devotees. It's very powerful. And that's a symptom of Brahman, of Vaikuntha. Every planet in Vaikuntha is self-illuminated like the sun. Right? That's where the sun gets it. The sun and the moon derive their power from Vaikuntha, from Brahman. Brahman is all effulgent. Right? So Daksha was elevated, but because of his, very elevated, but at the same time, and this is a warning for devotees, because devotees, we can be elevated, but at the same time, if we harbour some of these material mentality and are envious of others, then that can be a huge mark against the devotees, all of the good qualities that they have. Right? Criticize others, deny others, be envious of others. And it's why we're recommended to serve the devotees. If we have these, if we're unfortunate, well, we're unfortunate. Let's face it, otherwise we wouldn't be in the material world. But sometimes we have this enviousness hard to remove. But we can do it easily by just rendering service to the devotees. Just in the act of offering prasadam, we can easily remove any tinge of these disqualifications like envy and pride. And so therefore the devotee always presents themselves humbly. You know, we come in and we bow down before Prabhupada. I'm your dasosmi, I'm your servant. And we offer our obeisances to the devotees every day. Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. This is the mood of a devotee, is to always render service. And that removes that mood of servitude, eventually destroys these any qualities of any vestiges of envy and pride, and in due course of time it'll all be washed away. Gradually these things are removed, and especially if a devotee maintains the service attitude. This is the, so you know, what can I do for you? How can I serve you? That's the mood of a Vaishnava, Vaishnavi, and you know, rather than demanding service or avoiding it. If we're avoiding service, often that's a symptom of just being tired. So, you know, there's nothing like having a good night's sleep to solve most of your problems. If you're really tired, you know, oh, Prabhu, can you do this? Oh, no, not another. What else do you want me to do? Haven't you got enough out of me? Sometimes we'll find that in the body. Now, either it's a problem with the mentality, or you're just tired and you need to have a sleep. Most often that's the case. It's interesting, you know, sleeping gives you strength. You know that? It's true. Not that you, the devotees who are youngsters, they may not need to do this, but I've been going to, you know, my doctor encouraged me to exercise, so I go to the gym. What I've discovered is if I can lift more weights when I've had a good night's sleep. Isn't that amazing? So, you know, we're devotees and we think, ah, no sleep. Sleeping is Maya. Right? Sleep less. It's a sign of spiritual advancement. Right? But have a guess what? It may not be. It may be just a sign of foolishness. To be honest, this is my experience. So I'm thinking, yeah, no sleep. Oh, I'm really advanced. Then I got sick. Who's advanced? Who's advanced now? Right? Now you can't do anything. But we do have to be careful about service attitude. If you're tired, take rest. If you're ill, go to bed. Param Brahma. Don't think, oh, I've got to go to class. Macho man. Right? And then give everybody else the flu. Fantastic. You're so magnanimous. We share everything, right? Share your realizations, but not your flu, okay? Especially, you know, people are dying of this thing now. Great. So, but the service attitude. Daksha lost the service attitude. He had the mood, serve me, right? And that's symptomatic if we're... Now, you know, sometimes we're in a position of responsibility and devotees do have to do what you tell them to do, right? But that's, again, in the spirit of service to Krishna. That's fine. Right? That's necessary. That's required. You know, some people don't like it. Oh, you're just a controller. And you know, managers in ISKCON get a bad name because they're telling people what to do. And then people say, ah, you're just a controller. But hang on a second. Lord Krishna has his demigods, other personalities that are in charge of the creation. And that's their service. We can't criticize somebody for doing their service. Right? And if nobody was in charge, what do we got? Anarchy. Right? Then nothing gets done properly. So this is a system, you know, that's time-honoured, having somebody in charge. Because Prabhupada says, you know, if there's nobody in charge, then what is it? It's not an organisation, it's a disorganisation.
Chaos.
Huh?
Chaos.
Yeah, chaos. This is the chaos theory. This is how the universe was created, right? With a big bang. But it's not. The Bhagavatam tells us, no, it was created by the demigods who ordered, structured everything according to the plan of the, you know, the architect, the designer of everything, that's Krishna. So even, you know, being in control, issuing orders, but the devotee does it in a mood of service to the spiritual master, as Prabhupada managing ISKCON, organizing ISKCON. But even then, just because you're a manager doesn't mean we shouldn't get carried away with these things. Right? Position, dangerous. Position is can be a very dangerous thing when it's not wielded or carried in a mood of service to Krishna. Right? This is, and so there's that humility in doing that. But Daksha, he lost that, unfortunately. Very elevated, pious devotee in many respects, but got to see Lord Vishnu and so forth, but we can see missed the point, at some point missed the point. And that's why the devotees are very careful about position, wealth, followers, money, etc. They keep it for Krishna and for Krishna's pleasure, and they engage it in Krishna's service, understanding who it actually belongs to. Right? Ma gridham, what is it? Isavasyam idam savam yat kincha. No. Yeah. I've forgotten that. I know the verse, but I've forgotten it. Knowing full well to whom they belong, right? The devotee understands it belongs to Krishna. You're looking after it because that's been provided to you as your quota. So it's also yours, right? Not that, oh, it belongs to Krishna, give it to me. Huh? This is the mood of the devotees in the 70s. If it isn't nailed down, it belongs to Krishna, so we'll take it. Huh? And gave us a bad reputation in the process. The neighbours around here, you know, got so sick of the devotees pinching all their flowers. Hey, what's wrong with you? It belongs to Krishna. Huh? And, you know, how come you don't like being woken up at 4:30 in the morning with a big loud kirtan and a conch blowing? What's wrong with you? You're in Maya. But Krishna says, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. But encourage them in acts of devotion, but don't pinch their flowers. Ask them. They'll probably give it to you anyway if you just go and ask them. Then they benefit. They benefit more. People benefit more if they know they're giving to a devotee and they're giving to Krishna and they have the choice to give. Okay, any comments or questions? By Krishna. Well, I guess the question is that why does Krishna take offences to his devotees so seriously? Right? It's like a parent has great affection for their children, and they they
We're vicarious. The word is vicarious. So vicarious means you enjoy through the activities of others. Just like, for example, you go to the movies, right? I know you don't go to the movies, but just say you go to the movies. And there's a horror movie on, right? And you see something awesome or gruesome, you know, you go, what? So you feel it. Nothing's happening to you. You're just at the movie, sitting in a seat. Nothing's happening. But we react. Right? YouTube's full of the stuff, right? Five great mountain climbing fails, right? And you see the guy right up on the top of the building, right? He's doing a somersault or something, then he slips off the side and plummets 10 stories to his death. So you go, but nothing, you're just sitting in the seat watching the YouTube, right? So, wasting time, mind you. But we can learn something from everything. When Krishna sees that his beloved devotees are being offended, he gets hurt. He's upset. Just like if your best friend was hurt in an accident or whatever, you'd feel badly about it, right? That vicarious nature, we get that from Krishna. Huh? So Krishna has affection for the devotees. And so if somebody offends those devotees, then Krishna feels it. If he's feeling compassionate, well, he's always feeling compassionate, but at some point in time, we'll feel Krishna's compassion. Krishna's merciful with his club and with his embrace, with his affection. It's all Krishna's mercy, even the club. So he loves his devotees and will protect them and even punish. So Krishna has paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam. So he has two purposes, Prabhupada explains. One is to protect and show affection to the devotees. The other one is to destroy the demons. Right? So, don't offend. And for the devotees, now this is the interesting thing, you know, we're neophyte devotees and so therefore we kind of transgress some of these etiquettes. And so then Krishna has a special way of sorting that out so that our devotional qualities are enhanced and our less than devotional characteristics are, you know, erased. And so, you know, the example, we're like, every devotee is like a gem, right? But we need a bit of polishing. So do you know how they polish gems? They get a thing like a concrete mixer, you know, they pour some water in it, then they get the gems and they put it in and then they revolve them around and then they bump against each other and they knock off the sharp edges until they become all smooth. So, you know, churning device is ISKCON. We're all put in it, and then the time factor, Krishna turns it all around. We all bump into each other and gradually knock off all of the sharp edges and become smooth gems. Right? So, in that way, that's Krishna's mercy. We've got the association of the devotees, and
in that association, we gradually get purified and lose our enviousness and critical and offensive mentality over time. So that's Krishna's love and affection. Right? Puts us in the association of the devotees, then the devotees give us a hard time. But what we don't realise is actually we're giving them a hard time. We share it. Okay, anything else? Yes, Babuji. Too humble. Yeah, get rid of these too humble devotees. Who do they think they are? Yeah, it's pride. It's called false humility. It's boring. How do you avoid it? You know what Prabhupada said? There's a Hindi saying, too much devotion is a sign of a thief. What's that saying? Yeah, ati bhakti means too much bhakti. Yeah, good one. Too much bhakti. But, yeah, because, see, you can make a show of bhakti because there are external symptoms of bhakti. But if you're just imitating, it'll be revealed in due course of time. Right? Because, you know, they'll come to you and they'll say, oh, Prabhuji, what would you like me to do? You ask them to do something. That's the last you see of them. I come to see the temple president. Oh, I've just arrived in Melbourne. Prabhuji, you know, what would you like me to do? Haribol, blah, blah, blah. I'm your servant. Then you ask them to do something and that's it. They're gone. If you've been around for a while, you'll see all sorts of things. Or they just want to do what they want to do. They'll only do service, but according to their parameters. You've got something that needs to be done, but they'll only do what they want to do. Hayagriva. Why has he got what? Ashes. Lord Shiva is very renounced, and he assists he's called Bhutanath because he is very merciful to the Bhutas and the ghosts and the hobgoblins and the those denizens, those persons who live in the crematorium. Am I right? So he takes on a dress, right, that what's the word, is how do you put it? He dresses in such a way as to encourage his followers, right? Like, you know, if he dressed like a big king or a big demigod like Lord Brahma or whatever, then the Buddhas and the Praetors, they'd probably be a bit discouraged, you know. They wouldn't want to follow him. So, you know, he encourages the lowest characters, so he dresses like the low characters. That doesn't mean that he's a low character, though. He's just being merciful to the very fallen and encourages them in that way. That doesn't mean that we should dress like the most fallen, though. We're not that elevated, but that's why he does it. It's out of sympathy and to encourage those fallen persons. And, you know, sometimes we do that too. When we go on book distribution, we dress, you know, we know that Vaishnava attire is the most fashionable. But that's, other people don't understand that. So we go and dress like them for their benefit. Right? So they think we're just like them. And they'll listen to us. And they'll take a book from us. Right? If we go out in our devotional clothes, they'll sometimes get, you know, ooh, it's a Hare Krishna. Don't go near him. He's crazy. Right? Crazy for Krishna. But ignores material things, and they don't like that. Right? Ooh, how come you think you're better than us? Right? People criticize. You think you're better than us because you follow the four regulated principles. We don't like you. Right? So we dress like them to make it look like we're one of them so that they'll take a book. Is that right? Well, Haridas Thakur didn't take offence, but that didn't mean that there was no offence. And Krishna is able to see when offence has been committed, even though the devotee may not have taken offence. Still, Krishna sees the offence and will rectify it. This is what Prabhupada mentions. The devotee may not take offence, but Krishna sees the offence. And so he'll adjust accordingly. You know, amongst the devotees, there is so much of, in, you know, so many interactions, and it's easy to take offence, right? Or to misunderstand. And so, but all of these pretty much in the course of day-to-day activities, they're pretty minor. And so that's why we offer our obeisances every day. It's kind of like we start the day off with a clean slate. How many offences have we committed? We don't even know. Somebody got offended and we didn't even mean it, right? So therefore, every morning we offer our obeisances, and then everybody starts off on, you know, clean slate. Right? And then throughout the day we commit a few minor things. Right? It's the major ones that we've got to watch out for. It's a fact, you know, we shouldn't be too upset about the minor discrepancies. And we generally not. The devotee isn't, and tolerates also, even if there's some feeling of bereavement or discomfort or whatever, they put it aside. But Krishna doesn't, or he sorts it out. The little and the big, he sorts it all out for us. All right, we should finish here. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Shiva ki jai, Daksha Maharaj.